Mantras 4 and 5, the unconceivable characteristics of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Supreme Person possesses unique qualities. Since his features appear paradoxical and baffling to the mind, he cannot be understood by mental speculation. In Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna says that even the great sages and demigods are unable to comprehend him. All contradictions, however, are reconciled in his personal form, as it is confirmed in Srimad Bhagavatam. O Supreme Personality of Godhead, all contradictions can be reconciled in you. So it is in the sense that everything emanates from Krishna and it can be reconciled in his personal Bhagavan feature. If everything emanates from him, that means when you go back to him, then all seeming contradictions are actually solved. But since Krishna is never alone and he is always with his devotees, that means that the ultimate reality actually is the Lord's pastimes when he is together with his devotees. Srila Prabhupada also says in one place that the rasa dance is the ultimate information of the Vedas. So there, in these pastimes, everything becomes very clear. And all you have this famous paradox. If the Lord is all-powerful, can he produce something that is more powerful than his? If he can do everything, then it should be possible for him to do also this thing. But if he does this, then he is not anymore in this position as the most powerful. So in the pastimes of the Lord, we see that sometimes the devotee is more powerful than he is. Like how some of the cowherd boys, they defeat Krishna often. Or Krishna begs, he's begging Radharani or some of the other gopis, he's begging for forgiveness. That means he's in a junior position, so they are more powerful than him. So this is the answer of this paradox. It is possible, but it is done on the basis of love and affection. And because this challenge is based on envy, normally those who make these challenges, they cannot understand the answer. They won't be pleased by the answer, because they have this different way of thinking. One is envy and the other is pure love. Mantra 4 clearly suggests that the Absolute Truth is ultimately the Supreme Person, Bhagavan. Otherwise, there would not have been any need to mention so many of his personal characteristics. The Lord has multifarious energies which are present everywhere. The fact that his energies are all pervasive, however, does not mean that he has lost his personal existence or that he deteriorates. Srila Prabhupada explains in his purport to Chaitanya Charitamrita, Krishna Kirtan, you want to read?
Yes. For example, a businessman transforms his energy by establishing many big factories or business organizations, yet he remains a person, although his energy has been transformed into these many factories or business concerns. The Mayavadi philosophers do not understand this simple fact. Their tiny brains and poor fund of knowledge cannot afford them sufficient enlightenment to realize that when a man's energy is transformed, the man himself is not transformed, but remains the same person.
Thank you. So they cannot understand that he remains the same person. That means they cannot understand the very beginning of our course here. The very first mantra that we studied, the invocation, says literally the same thing. That he remains perfect and complete, although so many units emanate from him. So the Mayavadis have problem with Sambandha Gyan already, with establishing the field, and if they have problems in the very beginning, then the process and the goal will be also wrong. They won't attain the goal. Yes.
Purport to modify Prabhupada states that here is a description of some of Supreme Lord transcendental activities
yes.
executed by his inconceivable potentials. How can you relate the activities, how can you understand activities executed by an potentials?
Well, in a sense that there is no difference between, this is his desire, and because he's he has so many different energies, he's not like us. And he can, sometimes if it's conducive for enhancing the loving relationships with his devotees, he'll do it personally. He personally appears in the material world, not so much because he wants to destroy the demons. This is the secondary reason. The first, the most important is because he wants to reciprocate with his devotees. They want him here, and he appears. And when this is conducive for his for pleasing his devotees, then he'll do it personally. When it's not, then he'll just do it with his energies, through his energies. Like in 11th canto, it is described how just before Krishna left this world, after he fulfilled the desire of the demigods, he was considering, I went to so many places, I visited so many devotees that they wanted to see me, and he was counting, I went to even to Mahavishnu Loka, they wanted to have darshan with me. I went there. So I went to Yamaraj because I had to reclaim the sons of my mother. So Yamaraj and all of them, they took darshan of me. So this is done. I went so many places, but I didn't go to Badarika Shram. And then this is the whole thing of 11th canto. Krishna is preaching to Uddhava. He's imparting knowledge to him so that he can go to Badarika Shrama, to Nara Narayana, because he didn't have the darshan with Krishna personally. And Krishna is taking care. If he cannot go personally, he sends someone. But this is his first concern, his reciprocation, the reciprocation of his devotees. Everything is judged on this from this point of view. This is the most important consideration. And if it is the most important for Krishna, it should be for us also. If we are Krishna's followers, then the most important thing for us should be the relationship with Krishna and with his devotees. And everything else should be secondary. Is answering the question? Okay. In his purport to Mantra 5, Srila Prabhupada stresses the importance of the terms Saguna and Nirguna. Saguna means that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the reservoir of all transcendental qualities. Nirguna means that he is free of all material limitations. The impersonal school of thought raises the objection that the absolute truth must be devoid of all of qualities, nirguna. So here they are giving different meaning of nirguna, of these terms. Nirguna means that he is free of all material limitations. But the Mayavadis take it that it means that any appearance of such qualities should be considered an illusion. According to the Advaita Veda theory of Shankara, Brahman is the absolute truth. On the highest level of understanding, Paramartika, Brahman is entirely devoid of qualities and therefore free of limitations, Nirguna Brahman. This is actually the only Brahman that is accepted as real, according to Shankara. It's only the Nirguna Brahman that exists. Anything else doesn't exist. It's just an appearance. And it is temporary because the illusion is temporary. As soon as you realize this is an illusion, it ceases to exist for you, but it was never existing. It was always an illusion. So this is the only thing that exists. the consciousness without any, the pure consciousness without any subject or object or anything, just pure consciousness, without characteristics, without attributes, without desires. If you're wondering what is what it should be, it doesn't make sense. This is what the Vaishnavacharya explained, that such thing doesn't exist. Pure consciousness without subject, it doesn't exist in reality. So don't worry if you're wondering. Nirguna Brahman is one without a second, in a sense that there is nothing besides him in existence. The Vaishnavas take one without a second to mean, because we also say Krishna is one without a second, but the Vaishnavas mean different thing. Mean that there is only one Supreme Personality of Godhead, and he and his energies constitute the sum total of reality. There is just Krishna and his Svarup Shakti. This is everything, and there is only one Krishna, only one God. Still, in order to explain the material world, Shankara is forced to introduce a duality in his monistic doctrine. Here he is introducing the theory of Maya, illusion. Although he is professing monistic philosophy, still we have at least two things. There is the Brahman, Nirguna Brahman or Saguna Brahman. There is the absolute truth and there is the illusion. And how this illusion came about? What is the origin of this illusion? Because Nirguna Brahman doesn't have any desire. He doesn't want to produce anything. He's not even aware that he exists. If we take the technical definition of Nirguna Brahman, he's not aware even of himself. So he cannot have any desires. He cannot produce anything. So how this illusion appeared? And what is the nature of this illusion, of this material world and the Maya? So the answer is, it is what they use the term anirvachaniya. It is unexplainable. You cannot explain it. It is neither real. It is not real. Maya is not real. Also, it is not unreal. It is not both real and unreal. And then what is it? It is unexplainable. It is just the magic of Brahman. It is superimposition on Brahman, somehow, rather. Just like the classical example, if you have in a darkness, if you see something that that you think it's a snake, and you say it's a snake, but then you look and it's a rope, it's not a snake. That means the snake didn't exist, actually. It never existed. There was never a snake there. So you are in illusion. So in the same way, this material world was never actually there, and we also don't exist in this sense of separate individualities. It's just an illusion. It was never there. So it sounds very contradictory, but they admit this and they say it's just inexplainable. You cannot explain it. Anirvachaniya. This is what it means. Yes.
What is the difference between this part of their philosophy being unexplainable and the Achintya Vedavedita?
I was expecting that someone will ask this question. We ask this question when. But anyway, the difference is that we can explain. It is Achintya Bheda Bheda Tattva means it is inconceivable by the on the material platform, but still it can be explained logically, and it is reasonable. But this what they say here is. They themselves admit it's unexplainable. And it's full of contradictions. Although, if someone doesn't understand Achinti Bheda Tattva, it still could be used in the same way, just like a joker. If you don't know what to say, you just say Achinti Bheda Tattva. It could be misused, but originally it's not. It's not like this. It can be explained very logically, according to Shastra. But this thing cannot be explained. On a lower level of awareness, Vyavaharika, so there is this Paramartika. On the Paramartika level, the highest level of understanding, there is just Nirguna Brahman. When you go step down, then is the Vyavaharika. On this level, there is the appearance of the material creation, the living entities, the Saguna Brahman, which is Ishvara or Krishna or Vishnu when he appears in the material world, who is the creator, maintainer, and destroyer of the universe. Saguna Brahman is the lower Brahman because he possesses qualities. Omniscient, omnipotent. We will take it that Krishna's qualities, they actually enhance. Krishna is attractive to his devotees because of his qualities. We are all attracted to Krishna because he has all these nice, perfect transcendental qualities. 64 are mentioned by the acharyas. He has many more, but these are those who mean anything, something to us. So we'll take it that it is nice, actually. Krishna has qualities, we can interact with him. He's the Supreme Lord. They take it that if you have qualities, that means you are... That's a material thing. That means you are imperfect.
So they are taking that within this illusion, that Brahman appears as Saguna, some...
Yeah, so he's part of the illusion. They will even take Vaikuntha Pati, Narayana in Vaikuntha planets, also as a part of this illusion. He's also an illusion because he has a form and qualities. Anything that is has to do with qualities, relationships, is illusion necessarily. He possesses qualities and thus he is not free of limitations. The Mayavadis take all qualities to be inherently material. They don't have the concept of spiritual qualities. They cannot comprehend this. As Prabhupada says in the purport, when we read, their tiny brains and poor fund of knowledge cannot afford them sufficient enlightenment to realize that qualities actually, there is such thing as spiritual qualities. And Krishna is the possessor of all these nice, beautiful qualities. God as the supreme controller, the material energy, the individual souls, and the loving reciprocation between a devotee and God, all this exists on the level of ignorance only. On the perfect stage of spiritual understanding, Paramartika, there is only the pure consciousness without object, which is Nirguna Brahman. So in this way, the Advaitavada theory reaches a conclusion which contradicts one of the fundamental tenets of Vedanta, that Brahman is the cause of everything. Janmadi yasya yataha. Since Brahman is changeless, the Mayavadis argue, he must be without any effects. Hence the material world cannot be real because this will imply a change in Brahman. Thus, in order to save the unchangeable nature of Brahman, the Mayavadis sacrifice the world, reducing it to an illusion only. So here, they are struggling with the same old questions that has been a stumbling block for all different philosophies. Modern, ancient, Eastern, Western. Because all philosophy deal with Chit, Achit and Ishvara. With God, the living entity, and the material creation. And they always try to explain what is the relationship between these three categories. So the main problem is, how do you explain that by definition God is perfect, he never deteriorates, he never changes, and if we accept that everything emanates from him, then this material world also is his creation. So how do you explain the contradiction between the nature of God and the nature of this place here, which is, it's neither changeless, it is full of mistakes on one level. There are so many things, so many discrepancies, and there is birth, death, old age, disease. It's not eternal, it changes all the time. So how it is possible that from God, who is perfect, comes such a, emanates such an imperfect thing as this world? So the answer that Mayavadis give to this is very interesting. They just avoid the question, actually. They say, well, this the question is not proper. There is not such... The question is irrelevant, because there is no world. The world doesn't exist. So if the world doesn't exist, then we don't have to explain how the world is has such a nature, and the God has different nature. Brahman has different nature. So they just avoid the avoid answering the question. They just cancel the question. It looks very clever. And it is clever because Shankar is Shiva. Something like this is yes.
It's an absolute statement, but all philosophies deal with Chitta.
Yes, everybody deals with this. If it's real philosophy, it must deal with this. And we give an example. These are the main categories in philosophy. Of course, nowadays they don't accept God anymore. So
still, they deal with him, but they don't accept him.
Yeah. This is the same as you cannot define atheist on its own terms. You have to know what is atheist. Atheist just rejects God. So they are still dependent on God, even when they reject him. So we are speaking a few days before, we are talking about Austrian philosopher Karl Popper, who was struggling with the problem that the Western science, because he's a philosopher of science, Western science cannot produce real knowledge. They cannot come up with something that is absolute, and it is valid for all place, times, and circumstances. And then, instead of accepting this and trying to think deeply what is the actual reason of this, is that it's not connected to God, then he actually redefines the idea, the definition of knowledge, and he says that, well, knowledge is, there is no such thing as absolute knowledge, and knowledge is just a theory that some clever guy came up with. A theory, then this theory was tested by rigorous questioning, then it was proved that it is true, because we couldn't disprove that it is it's reality. And then it is accepted as knowledge. Of course, it doesn't mean that it is absolute knowledge or it is truth at all. It is just accepted as knowledge in this point of time. And in 10, 20 years, some other theory will come, and then this theory will be proved wrong, and then we'll accept the new theory. And this is all knowledge means, just coming up with new ideas, new theories of reality. So they are again the same idea. They just avoid the question. They avoid the problem. Also, the Christians, they struggle with the same problem. How do you explain that God is perfect and there is evil in the world, and the world is imperfect seemingly? So Augustine, one of the main philosophers in Christianity, he says, in order to save the transcendental nature of God, then he says, he proposes the theory of creation from nothing, ex nihilo, from God created the world out of nothing. And his motive was good. He wanted to save the transcendental nature of God. Otherwise, how do you explain? There is a transcendental perfect being, and then you have the imperfect world. How do you make this connection? So he says he created it out of nothing. He didn't create it from himself, in other words. Then, of course, they run into another paradox that from nothing, nothing comes. You cannot just take nothing and make something. But anyway, they don't deal with this so much. So we see all these attempts to explain this relationship between God and the world. All these attempts, they are unsuccessful because they don't accept the knowledge that comes through parampara, and they try to figure it out. But they come to paradox after paradox. And how do we explain this paradox?
The world is created to facilitate the desires of living entities.
Yes. Yes, this one part.
If they follow the instructions.
Yes, exactly. This one part, and from the ontological point of view, how do we reconcile this seeming contradiction that Brahman is by definition changeless and the world is changing? This is explained in this purport here that I would like someone to read. Yes. Wow.
Shiva in the Chandogya Upanishad.
Yeah,
in the Chandogya Upanishad, there is the following mantra: Aitad Atmyam Idam Sarvam. This mantra indicates without a doubt that the entire world is Brahman. The absolute truth has inconceivable energies, as confirmed in the Svetashvatara Upanishad. Parasya Shaktir Vividhaiva Shruyate. And the entire cosmic manifestation is evidence of these different energies of the Supreme Lord. The Supreme Lord is a fact, and therefore whatever is created by the Supreme Lord is also factual. Everything is true and complete, Purnam. For the original Purnam, the complete absolute truth, always remains the same. Purnat Purnam Udachyate Purnasya Purnam Adaya. The absolute truth is so perfect that although innumerable energies emanate from him and manifest creations which appear to be different from him, he nevertheless maintains his personality. He never deteriorates under any circumstances. It is to be concluded that the entire cosmic manifestation is a transformation of the energy of the Supreme Lord, not of the Supreme Lord or absolute truth himself, who always remains the same. The material world and the living entities are transformations of the energy of the Lord, the absolute truth, or Brahman, who is the original source. In other words, the absolute truth, Brahman, is the original ingredient, and the other manifestations are transformations of this ingredient. This is also confirmed in the Taittiriya Upanishad. This entire cosmic manifestation is made possible by the Absolute Truth, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In this verse, it is indicated that Brahman, the Absolute Truth, is the original cause, and that the living entities, jivas, and the cosmic manifestation are effects of this cause. The cause being a fact, the effects are also factual. They are not illusion.
Thank you. So this is the Vyasadeva's own explanation of this problem. It's called Shakti Parinama Vada. That means the transformation of the energy of Brahman. Brahman doesn't change, but his energy changes because he wants this energy to work in this way. And why he wants this? Because this will enhance his relationship with the living entities, and then second, the jivas, they want to be, some of them, they want to be independent from him, and then he facilitates this also. So the material energy works under his supervision, but he doesn't, he's not undermined in any way. This is called Shakti Parinama Vada, and then the Shankara's theory is called Vivarta Vada. So this is interesting. Vivarta means illusion. It's interesting that Shankara, in order to establish his theory, in his purport commentaries on Vedanta Sutra, he has to contradict Vyasadeva. And he doesn't do it directly in the very mantra where Vyasadeva establishes this Shakti Parinama Vada, but he does it a little later because it will be very uncultured to do this. And he doesn't say anything there, but little later, few commentaries later, he actually says that Vyasadeva is wrong. And if you know, if you read carefully, you know what he means. It's very clear what he says. But it's still done in this polite way. So it's the whole theory is based on rejecting the authority of Vyasadeva. It's funny. It's interesting. So, establishing his theory of illusion, Brahma Satyam, Jagan Mithya, Shankara quotes an analogy from Shvetashvatara Upanishad. The Upanishad speaks about the magician who is a juggler only for those who are deceived by his tricks and who fancy that they perceive the objects conjured up by the... But to the discerning few who see through the trick and have no illusion, the juggler fails to be a juggler. Similarly, those who believe in the world show, think of God through this show and call him its creator, etc. But for those wise few who know that the world is mere show, there is neither any real world nor any real creator. The fact that the wise few can penetrate through the trick of the juggler does not entail that the juggler and his audience do not exist. The Mayavadis claim that they are the few chosen wise men because they don't accept the creator as real. According to Srimad Bhagavatam, however, a person who does not recognize the presence of the Supreme Personality of God is considered a fool. Being beyond the range of limited sense perception, you are the eternally irreproachable factor covered by the curtain of deluding energy. You are invisible to the foolish observer, exactly as the actor dressed as a player is not recognized. This comfort in Bhagavad Gita, fools deride me when I descend in the human form. They do not know my transcendental nature as the Supreme Lord of all that be. Since the Lord is the absolute reality, the material world cannot be false. It is just an inferior energy of the Supreme Lord. The inferiority does not imply falsity. What is false is not the Lord's energy, but the perverted way the jiva perceives her. The conditioned soul takes Maya to be without any connection with Krishna, and this false conclusion is called an illusion. Everything we see is Krishna only, but when we see Krishna and do not recognize him, this is illusion and ignorance. This illusion is the Purusha Bhava, the conviction that I am the controller and enjoyer. Ishvara Mahamogi. So Prabhupada always says, if the person who created everything exists and is real, then his creation must be also real. And it is offensive to call God's creation illusion. So the Mayavadis say it is just illusion and doesn't exist. But if we consider the example of having real money and false money, the false money are false. You cannot buy something with them. But why do they exist? Why some people are bewildered and confused by, cheated by this false money?
Because there is also real money.
Because there is also real money. There is something that actually exists. There is vastu, substance in reality, which is Krishna and his energy. So there must be something real. So the world is real, and it's not just illusion. Illusion is the way, the perverted way we perceive this world. If we perceive this material energy as separate from Krishna, we are in the position of Ravana, who wants to take away Sita from Ramachandra and enjoy. So this is the illusion. It's not the material energy itself. It is real. It's just temporary. According to the Vaishnava scholars, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is both Saguna and Nirguna. Did we understand the real meaning of Saguna and Nirguna applied to Krishna? It was explained in the very beginning. Yes?
Saguna means Saguna means he is for transcendental qualities.
Okay.
Nirguna means he has no material qualities.
Very nice. No material contamination. Did you hear this? Okay. This is the most important thing from all this. Yes? You didn't? Can you say it more loudly?
Okay. Saguna means Krishna is full of transcendental qualities, and Nirguna means Krishna has no material qualities.
Yes. Did you hear now? This is the most important thing from all this philosophical, dry, boring talks we're having today. If you catch this, then don't bother about the rest. According to the Vaishnava scholars, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is both Saguna and Nirguna. Whenever Shastra describes the Supreme as Nirguna, the meaning is that the Lord is not tinged with material contamination, and Saguna applied to Krishna indicates that the Lord is full with perfect transcendental qualities.
As stated in the Bhagavad Gita, the Lord descends on the earth by his own internal potency, and therefore there is no question of his becoming materially contaminated, changed, or otherwise affected by the modes of material nature. The Lord is Saguna by his own internal potency, but at the same time he is Nirguna, since he is not in touch with the material energy. The restrictions of the prison house are applicable to prisoners who are condemned by the king's law. But the king is never affected by such implications, although he may visit the prison house out of his own goodwill.
Thank you. So now we have discussion about Saguna and Nirguna taken from a book of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, which I won't read, and we won't talk about this. You are encouraged to read this on your own, because I'm afraid if you start reading this, some people will really feel very bored. It's dry philosophy again. Yeah, not thematic study, is Tattva Sutra.
Based on that.
Yes, it's based on Tattva Sutra. This is a Naya Sutra.
This is something for next year.
Yes.
What's the difference between Tattva Sutra and Naya
Sutra?
I couldn't hear the question.
What's the difference between Tattva Sutra and Naya Sutra? Two books from Bhaktivinoda Thakur, basically following the same way of presentation.
Naya also gives the Tattva.
Yes. Yeah, just Tattva Sutra is more elaborate, and Amnaya Sutra is more concise. But the same idea. Bhaktivinoda Thakur gives a sutra. The whole philosophy of Gaudiya Vaishnavism is presented in sutra form in these two books. So he gives a sutra, then he gives commentaries, or he supports this statement by quoting the Upanishads, the Shruti, the Smriti, and the Gaudiya Acharyas. He follows this.
Is it like part one and part two, or they're both the same thing?
No, they're different books. They're separate books, but they deal with the same, basically the same subject. Just one is more elaborate than the other. Tattva Sutra is bigger, and the Naya Sutra is shorter. The same idea. And they're divided in Sambandha Vidya Prayojana. They have different sections. Okay, a little more. Thus, the conclusion of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur is that the Lord is full of transcendental qualities. Attracted by those qualities, the devotees enter in different types of relationships with the Lord based on loving devotional service to Him. The Vaishnavas, therefore, react strongly against the theory that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is devoid of qualities. This idea is not only theologically absurd, but most importantly, a disturbance for the devotees who are relishing loving reciprocations with the Lord. In the purport of Srimad Bhagavatam, Srila Prabhupada explains, the Mayavadi philosophers take the absolute truth to be nirguna, without qualities, in accordance with the impersonalistic view, but actually the Lord is the reservoir of all good qualities. One of the most important qualities of the Lord is his inclination to his devotees, for which he is called Bhakta Vatsala. According to Srila Prabhupada, the term Saguna Brahman refers not to the Lord contaminated by matter, but rather to the conditioned souls and the material creation. These are the additional meanings of this Saguna. This was the main meaning that we discussed till now, and Srila Prabhupada uses it additionally in the following way. So the first purport. The living entities who are many and who are entangled in this material world are not pure. However, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is pure and detached. Due to being covered by the material body, the living entities are not self-effulgent, but the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Paramatma, is self-effulgent. The living entities, being contaminated by the modes of material nature, are called Saguna, whereas Paramatma, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is Nirguna, not being under the influence of the material modes. So here, Prabhupada says, Krishna is pure and detached. So, yes.
So, previously we saw that Krishna is referred to with the word Brahman. And
yes.
And here the word Jivas are referred to with Brahman, and also the material world is referred to as Brahman. So, is everything that exists can be referred to as Brahman?
Yes. Sarva Kalpidam Brahma. Everything is Brahman. Just we have the Supreme Brahman, which is Bhagavan, Krishna, and then the subordinate Brahman. The question was, yes?
We can't hear those conversations.
Excuse me.
Nobody can get behind.
Can you repeat your question?
My question was, we've seen that Krishna is referred to as Brahman, and now we've seen that Jivas are referred to as Brahman, and the material world is also referred to as Brahman. So my question was, is everything that exists Brahman?
So, everything is Brahman, just there are different grades of Brahman. There is the Supreme Brahman, Parabrahman, and the subordinate Brahman. Subordinate. But otherwise everything is Brahman.
Just my bodies, they present only Nirguna Brahman. That's the only Brahman that exists. So you're saying there's that plus two other Brahmans, or is there unlimited different types of Brahmans that are quantified?
No, our idea of Brahman is not this Nirguna idea that they have. As we mentioned, the Vaishnava Acharyas say that it doesn't exist pure consciousness, just pure consciousness without any object or subject doesn't exist in reality. So we don't accept this at all. It's Brahman is full of qualities and they attract the devotees. The Supreme Brahman, Krishna, is full of qualities. They attract the devotees and they render service to him. So it's all Brahman, because from Brahman, Brahman emanates. It's perfect and complete. But there is difference in the relationship between the Jiva, the Brahman.
The devotees take Brahman to mean spiritual, whereas Nirguna Brahman means illusion, not ignorance.
The concept is bogus. It's illusion. It's illusion. It's false. Although they would say that it's spiritual, they want to be spiritual. They would like to present it in such a way. But the idea is it's rejected by the authorities. And I guess in a sense we can say this is the Brahma Jyoti, what they speak of. But they take it to that connection with Bhagavan. So this part is, we don't accept. Okay, anyway, it's too late. We'll continue Thursday.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Shiva Prabhupada ki.